on ABC Local Radio, Radio Australia and the World Wide Web. This is Sunday Nights with John Cleary.
Hi there and welcome to Sunday Night on ABC Radio around Australia through Radio Australia and via the web to the world. Great to be with you. Well, we begin this week with a question. What is it to be Jewish today? For most in Australia, this is essentially a matter of tradition, expressed as Orthodox, Conservative or Reform. Yet around the globe, matters of faith are increasingly compounded by issues of national, political and ethnic identity. And this is just one of the themes we'll be pursuing with our guests from the Limud Oz Jewish Festival taking place this weekend. They're going to join us in just a few moments' time. In about an hour, we'll be joined by Andrew West of Radio National's Religion and Ethics Report to talk about religious news around the world today. Then the Chief Executive of Anglicare Australia, Casey Chambers, will be joining us to talk about the work of one of the nation's least visible yet most significant charitable agencies. Noel will be along with a good life, and then Jared McKenna will join us to wrap up the day in the chat room, where you can talk about the issues of the week, be they political, social or religious. A busy night on Sunday night, and as usual, we begin with a song. What more appropriately than Jane Oliver, One More Ride on the Merry-Go-Round.
I look at the world that I have conquered, have won every spin of the wheel. One more ride on the merry-go-round.
Canadian artist Jane Oliver, that from the early 80s, from an album called First Night. On it, there's a couple of songs that actually became very, very famous. Her version of Some Enchanted Evening and her reading of the Don McLean song, Vincent. But that's One More Ride on the Merry-Go-Round. You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio around Australia through Radio Australia and via the web to the world. A question, what is it to be Jewish today? For most in Australia, this is essentially a matter of tradition, expressed as Orthodox, Conservative or Reform. Yet around the globe, matters of faith are increasingly compounded by issues of national, ethnic and even political identity. And this is just one of the themes we're going to pursue with our guests this evening. It's a very special welcome to participants in the Limud Oz Jewish Festival taking place this weekend, to Gershon Baxson. Gershon is the chairman and founder of the Israel-Palestinian Center for Research and Information, a joint Israeli-Palestinian public policy think and do tank located in Jerusalem. To Gilad Kariv, Gilad is the executive director of the Israel Movement for Progressive Judaism and has been a leader and advocate on behalf of liberal Judaism since 1998. He's also a board member of the Israel Association for the Promotion of Freedom of Science, Religion and Culture. To Mark Baker, who's the director of the Australian Centre for Jewish Civilization and associate professor of Holocaust and Genocide Studies in the School of Historical Studies at Monash. And finally, to one of Australia's best known storytellers, who's been with us before on Sunday Night, Donna Jacob-Seif. Welcome to you all. Thanks so much for joining us on Sunday Night.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Who's going to be first and tell me what the festival is about? Mark Baker, perhaps I could come to you. What's this gathering about? What's Limud Oz?
Limud comes from the word to learn, and it's a festival of Jewish learning. So it runs for two solid days, and it runs continuously from morning till late at night. Mostly
I
Limud people.
We are in competition with
that's
some
right. Most Limud people won't be listening because they're still in a session. And it's a festival where ideas are discussed, debated, people argue. And the distinctive feature of Limud is that there are about 10 sessions running parallel at the same time in different rooms. And it allows people to express the diversity of Jewish ideas, Jewish thought, Jewish culture. It's run in different streams. So it touches upon the questions that I know you want to consider this evening, which is, what is a Jew? And the answer is that there is no answer, and people are still arguing at Limud, and they'll be arguing tomorrow and once it's over.
Donna Jacob Seif, you're somebody who specialises in telling stories about life from a Jewish perspective. For you, what is being a Jew?
Well, you know, that's a tough question. Being a Jew for me? I think that for me, it's really in my marrow. Everything that I do is a reflection of my Jewishness, which isn't necessarily a reflection of faith, or it's really something about, for me, it's mostly social justice. It's the message from the Torah about social justice and about my you know, religion, about social justice, that is the thing that drives me. And I guess I breathe and am Jewish, rather than it being something about belief.
If I had to take one of your stories, what for you would be a story that captures for you the essence of being Jewish?
Well, I have to trust the first one that comes to mind. So this is about Rabbi Zuzia, who was a beautiful rabbi that lived on this earth many years ago. And one day he was weeping, and his disciples came up to him and said, "Rabbi Zuzia, what's the matter?" And he said, "I'm crying because I know what it is that they will ask me when I stand at the gates of heaven." And they were frightened. They said, "What is it?" And Rabbi Zuzia said, "When I stand at the gates of heaven, they won't ask me, 'Why weren't you more like Moses?' or 'Why weren't you more like Abraham?' They'll say to me, 'Zuzia, why weren't you Zuzia?'" And I feel that there is something essentially in Judaism which allows us freedom to be unique and to find our own relationship with God or non-God, or and our own relationship with our Judaism. There is so many possibilities. It gives us a freedom to be true to ourselves.
Gilad, let me come to you next. Let me quote an anecdote to you. There was a fabulous BBC television series many years ago. I think it was called The Long Search. I think it was in The Long Search. And there was a moment where the commentator was speaking to a rabbi, and he said to this rabbi, and I think it was in Jerusalem, and an Orthodox rabbi, he said to the rabbi, "Do you believe the Bible is the word of God?" And the rabbi said, "Yes, of course I believe the Bible is the word of God." And he says, "Then why all this argument? Why all this commentary?" He said, "I believe the Bible is the word of God. What we argue about is what he meant when he said it."
That's true.
Does that say something essentially about the Jewish tradition?
Yes, I think as Mark mentioned, the question is not what it is to be a Jew, but mainly how do we discuss the question. The Jewish culture is a culture of ongoing dialogue, of ongoing learning of the past and designing new answers for the future. It's not by accident that the Talmud became to be the basic a writing of the Jewish culture, because in a way the Talmud is not a book of how to live your Jewish life with clear answers. It presents you the mechanism of discussion about how to live your life as a serious Jew or as a profound Jew. And in that regard, following your previous action, I agree with Donna that I believe that for all of us in this panel, we are Jews. And the question is, how do we present, experience our Judaism? And this is a profound part of our identity. But if I need to give, to choose one word that for me presents my Jewish identity, is the concept of responsibility. First, responsibility towards your unique heritage and to your commitment to give it a serious place in your personal life, communal life, and national life. It is also about responsibility towards your family, your community, your nation, but for the entire human race and the world at all.
Gershon, being a Jew is something that is discussed in one context sitting here in a studio in Australia. But more and more, if you live in Israel. Being a Jew is associated not only with a religious identity, but with a cultural and political identity.
National identity. A
national identity. Good or bad? I mean, there are...
I don't know if we can define it on a scale of good or bad. It's a reality. I'm atheist. In fact, I define myself as a religious atheist. I take my atheism religiously. together with that, I'm also very Jewish. I'm very Jewish in the way that I relate to myself and my family and my culture, my heritage, my civilization, my history, and perhaps more important, my current reality and my vision for the future. I'm part of the State of Israel, and I'm part of the State of Israel as a part of the Jewish people. The State of Israel, for me, is the nation state of our Jewish people. We also have a Palestinian minority who are members of our state, and as Jews, I believe, we're taught that they have to be equal in opportunity, equal in rights, equal in obligations toward the state they're living in, the society they're living in. And this is part of the dilemmas that we face as Israelis who are Democrats, who believe in Israel as the Jewish nation state, but also believe in Israel with the prophetic wisdom that we inherit with our heritage and obligate us to ensure that everyone who lives within our state are equal citizens.
One other question relating to that. Israel, modern Israel, started off as a secular democracy. What we're seeing in recent years across the Middle East and across other things is a revival of religion as a sort of a key marker of identity. And that's colouring the nature of the debate about what Israel is today.
I think it is, but I don't think anyone in Israel seriously challenges the notion that Israel must remain a civil state, not a theocracy. Even the religious political parties that exist in Israel are not fighting for religious law, for halakha, to become the law of the state. Everyone accepts the nature of Israel as a civil state with a civil legal authority. There is, I find, in not scientific study, but in observation, a correlation between religiosity of the society of Israel and how close or how far we are from peace with our neighbors. And it's parallel, it's a mirror image in the Palestinian and Arab societies as well. The further we remove ourselves from the possibility of peace or the belief that peace is possible, the more religious the society tends to become in our society and in Palestinian society. When we were closer to peace in the mid-90s, throughout the late 90s, there was a significant decline on what I would call the religiosity of the state.
We might talk about cause and effect in that later on, because that is a very interesting topic, and it's not just about Israel, that topic. It's a much wider one. But let me first ask some really basic questions of the nature of Judaism. We've described an arc here from atheism through a sort of liberal progressive arc, but at another end you will have people who would regard themselves as orthodox, conservative, whatever those terms mean, right through to people who, in terms that we generally understand in the West, would be regarded as fundamentalists. That is, the word of God is the word of God, and he dictated it, and it's meant by that. To what extent is the issue of cultural identity able and capable of triumphing over that sort of diversity? And Gilad, I'll come to you first on this, because it seems to me this is one of the issues you have to deal with, and somebody who's interested in science and progressive thought. That's a pretty wide gulf or spectrum to have to deal with.
Yes, but I think that you really touched the point. I think that the reason the Jewish faith and the Jewish nation succeeded to revive itself in modern era is the understanding that Judaism is not only about religion, and at the same time, Judaism is not only about nationality. This very unique mixture between cultural aspects of Jewish life, national aspects. Mark is adding a center for Jewish civilization. This concept that Judaism is much more than a religion is helping the Jewish people to secure its existence in days that many Jews do not identify with the religious aspects of Judaism, and in days they, in which there is a big debate over religion between the different denominations of Judaism. I have a very strong debate with my Orthodox friends over our theology. Unfortunately, it was translated in Israel, but in some of the overseas diaspora communities too, to a political debate over the Orthodox monopoly that exists in Israel in the area of religious services, but also in some of the diaspora communities. But still, although we face some serious disputes, we share the same civilization, as I mentioned, and it serves us all as a common base.
Mark Baker, to what extent are the way in which changes in religious identity, the polarization of those changes in religious identity happening elsewhere in the world, and in the Middle East in particular, affecting the way Jews see themselves in Australia and the way the debate about whether you're Orthodox or progressive or non-practicing, are those debates beginning to penetrate in ways that they haven't in the past?
Well, the Jewish community is always debating its identity. That's one of the hallmarks of being Jewish. I think what's unusual is this panel that we're all in vehement agreement with each other. The only point of disagreement that I've found so far is that Gershon described himself as a religious atheist. It's a term that I used to describe myself. Gershon said, though he takes his atheism seriously, I take my religion seriously. And I think one of the first things to just clarify is that often Judaism is seen through the prism of other religious paradigms, such as Christianity. And Judaism isn't a set of beliefs. It's not about a faith. One can be a religious atheist. Judaism is a mix of culture. It's about identity. It's about religion. It includes politics. And so, therefore, one is a Jew, even though one doesn't necessarily agree on any shared belief system. And over, since the beginning of Judaism, there have always been different expressions of what it is to be a Jew. The denominations that you've talked about, progressive Judaism, Reform, Orthodox, are 19th century labels. And I think that all of these labels are being shaken up and reconfigured today. In some ways, we're living in what we call a post-denominational age, where the boundaries between different groups are at one and the same time being sharpened and further polarized, but also the boundaries are being blurred. I think it's a result of globalization. It's a result of the impact of social media, where people are in contact with each other. So I'm very involved in a synagogue that is an Orthodox synagogue. It bases itself on traditional Jewish practice, except it is an egalitarian synagogue, where women are equal participants in the ritual. So in that sense, the boundaries that have traditionally divided Orthodoxy from the progressive sectors of the community are being blurred. And I think that's very characteristic of the age in which we're living, where people are challenging labels that have been rigidly affixed to identity.
I guess that's what I was trying to sort of edge towards. I mean, I guess the great paradigm in this is the way you saw Jewish culture influence the United States in the 20th century, quite particularly. I mean, you still don't have the American musical without it being Jewish in some deep sense. Yet also, the American cultural experience has changed Judaism. Mm-hmm. Now, what is it, Donna, you would say about your experience of Judaism in Australia that contributes to that discussion about who and what Judaism is? And is the point that Mark made about the way the edges are changing, the boundaries are changing, do you see in local synagogues a change?
A renewal service. And renewal is, it's a new movement, really, that sort of looks at the service that I go to. There are instruments that are played on Shabbat, which isn't normally the case in Orthodox services. There's equality. There's a mystical sort of aspect of it as well. There's a sort of participatory kind of elements so that we all read from the Torah together, we all find the connections to it together. It's just a different kind of service that was never available to me 10 years ago. It's a new movement, essentially. And there is this kind of room to be able to find our own individual expression of Judaism in these, you know, it's not as rigid as it used to be in some respects, but I also think that historically it has been sort of very pluralistic, and there have been other expressions of it. We just forget, and that we, you know, the Orthodox community sometimes, or some people in the Orthodox community, want to preserve something which they feel is very pure about Judaism, but I'm not too sure if historically that is the case.
That Orthodoxy itself was a product of a culture and a time.
It changes all the time, and I think it's a pretty good time to be Jewish at the moment, because there are this kind of blurring of the edges and a sort of a world kind of.
Let me go back to a foundational moment, and I won't dwell on this, but if there is a moment in which the Jewish people become the Jewish people, is it that moment when Moses comes down from the mountain with the tablets of stone, and he's got them written, and he sees a group of people worshipping the God which says, "Give me the stuff from heaven," and he says, whack, smashes the stones. He said, no, that's not the way it is. What it is how we live together, and here's the way we do it. There is a moment which it says it's not about gimme, gimme from the sky. It's about something else.
Well, I think it begins at that moment you described and prolonged itself over the 40 years of wandering in the desert, which transformed the Hebrews, who the word Hebrew comes from crossing over. They crossed over from slavery to becoming a nation of their own, of freedom, of free people, and taking on responsibility for themselves. So it's not the give me the manna from heaven, it's making me take responsibility for my life. And the generation of the desert had to overcome the experience of slavery in order to become a free people in their land. So this is the generation, or the two generations, that it took before we entered the land of Israel and became a free people.
Does anyone else want to go to that? Yeah, Mark.
The story is one of the foundational stories, but what's important to understand in Judaism is that the biblical text is always seen through the prism of what's known as Midrash, which is an interpretative commentary around that. So when I hear you relay that story, what it immediately triggers is a whole array of other stories through which I read that text. So, you know, there is an argument, again, in the Talmud, it is always an argument about what that moment means. In one version of the story, God goes around looking for a nation who will accept the responsibility, and Gilad talked about responsibility, but the responsibility of what it means to accept the law, and the Jews are the only ones willing to take on those restrictions. In another version, the Jews say no, and the story says that God held a mountain above their heads and offered them the same deal, and they said yes. So you have two very different interpretations. But I think the key point about Judaism is that since the rabbinic era, the idea is developed that the saying in Hebrew is lo bashamayim hi, it is not in heaven. So it's up to us to interpret what the text means. So it means that it's a very anthropomorphic kind of religion, and in that sense it mitigates against the kind of fundamentalism that you might find expressing itself in other religions. So even though Judaism has a problem with a political religious fundamentalism today, Jewish fundamentalism operates on a very different level, because the text is always read against other texts and is very fluid.
Mm-hmm. I guess what I was getting at in that story was, in a way of saying that point, that here's a moment where a religion says it's really as much about what you're doing here and now as it is about what's going on up there, somewhere like that. Gilad, you were nodding your head.
It is definitely a critical moment in the Jewish perspective of history. But I think it's also important to mention that if you look for the critical moments that we cherish, the two important events that we mention again and again on every Shabbat evening are other two events. One is the creation of the world, and the second is the Exodus. And I'm mentioning it because I think that one of the Jewish narratives that we need to explore is this ancient call to be at the same time fully attached to your universal identity and to your unique national or religious Jewish identity. In a way, you can reflect over the Jewish identity as an attempt to bring together this universal commitment and our national, religious, internal commitment. Not all the time we found and we are finding the right balance between our universal responsibility and our national responsibility. But this is, I think, one of the important calls of the Jewish tradition to all of us.
That is a big challenge for almost any...
For a very small nation, yes. And a very small religion, and we need to keep in mind that we are talking today about 15 million Jews around the world. Sometimes when you ask someone who is not Jew, is not Jewish, how many Jews there are in the world, he will say over a billion, because, you know, the media is so occupied with the story of the Jewish people. But in the end, we're talking about a very small people and a small number of believers in the Jewish faith. And it's always a challenge how you secure your continuity while you're trying to integrate yourself in the wider culture.
And lots of other groups would like to know the secret. You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia through Radio Australia and via the web to the world. Our question is, what does it mean to be Jewish today? Our guests, Gershon Buxin, Gilad Kariv. We're also talking with Mark Baker and Donna Jacob-Seif. If you've got some questions you'd like to ask our panel, please feel free, 1-300-800-222. 1-300-800-222, the number to ring on ABC Radio this evening around Australia, 1-300-800-222. Let me extend now this conversation into an area we touched on with Gershon earlier and talk about the situation in the Middle East as it presents itself. Over the last few weeks, we've watched the war in Syria change from what initially began as a purely political war and morph into a sectarian confessional strife between Sunni and Shia. We mentioned earlier that over the last 30 years, you've seen a shift in the political culture of Israel from a secular state to a state over which the central nature of the tradition and the ownership of the tradition and how it should be politically expressed is at issue. Are we seeing religion reappear in a political garb, particularly in the Middle East, which we don't yet seem to be able to get a handle on how to grapple with?
I think we've seen through the Arab revolts, which are commonly called the Arab Spring, fundamentalist or Islamic political movements come to power in Tunisia, in Libya, it's happening in Egypt, likely in Syria as well. So on the Islamic side, certainly in those countries which are not monarchies, and the revolutions have taken place, replacing post-colonialist regimes with Islamic regimes. But I see this very much as part of a transition period. The Muslim Brotherhood parties or associated parties have come to rise because they were the only legitimate political bodies that were in some way able to function during the dictatorship regimes that existed prior to them. So the other liberal democratic parties that might have launched the revolutions in Tahrir Square in Egypt were not able to organize themselves politically in time to present themselves to election, whereas the Muslim Brotherhood parties or associated parties were able to organize throughout the years in the framework of the local mosque, where they participated in social development, in charity, in education, in providing healthcare services in the community. They were organized, even if they were illegal, during the time of the dictatorship regimes. So I think it's both sociological, that Islam is the answer at time of struggle, of time of need, in time of fear, when we don't know what the future will hold. But it's also a framework, I think, of transition before these societies find a balance for themselves between political Islam and political secularism. We certainly see this struggle in Egypt. It's taking shape. And I think the outcome of the next elections, whenever they're held in the coming months in Egypt for the lower house of parliament, will show us that the Muslim Brotherhood won't have the same power that it gained in elections a year ago. In Israel, we have a very interesting situation where we have the rise of these questions of religion, but we have the first government in a very long time without the Orthodox, the ultra-Orthodox parties as members of the government. They're sitting on the outside as the opposition now, and this enables a period of some legislative change in the power that the Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox parties had in the past. So it's also a very interesting period of transition.
The government moving on the issue of military service.
Military service is one of them. The election of the chief rabbis of Israel is another one, which is being debated now, and we will probably not have an ultra-Orthodox chief rabbi, Ashkenazi chief rabbi, but a what's called a national Zionist chief rabbi in the coming elections there. There are all kinds of various changes. We see the rise in Gilgad, could speak about this, of the women of the wall, of women who are coming to the Western Wall, the Welling Wall, and demanding that they have a place for them to pray as they want, equally at the physical structure which symbolizes the Jewish presence in the land of Israel, the places closest to the place where the temple stood, and women are struggling there to be equal members of the Jewish faith in their practice at the Western Wall.
Gilad, I'll get you to comment on that, and then I'll come to Donna on this general question of the role of women in Israel, and then I'll come back to Mark with a more general question. But do you want to pick up on what Gershon was saying?
Yeah, look, I think that it's important to say that there is not a lot to compare between the role of religion in the Muslim and Arabic countries around Israel and the role of religion in Israeli life. In the end, still Israel, I think, is a strong and a vibrant secular civil democracy with many challenges, but still it's a vibrant democracy. But I do agree with Gershon that religion does play an important role in the public life in Israel. And it's not going to change.
Well, religion is deployed for political purposes in most societies anyway. You see it in the US, you see it everywhere. I mean, I guess you see it deployed in Israel when there's any debate about the nature of the boundary of the state, whether it's Eretz Israel or the Israel of 1948 or the Israel of 1967. That gets overlaid with religious questions.
But when you keep in mind that in Israel there is no separation of synagogue and state, and for historic reasons and political reasons, the government is deeply involved in the establishment of religion in a way that gives a monopoly to one denomination, not only inside the Jewish community. All Orthodox establishments in the different religious communities in Israel enjoy a legislated monopoly and receive a massive support by the government. The outcome is that the progressive forces in the religious Jewish community in Israel find it hard to compete in an open market, keeping in mind that religion does play a role also in regard to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, to the liberal character of the state. It's crucial that we will be able to cultivate progressive religious voices aside to secular progressive forces, because religion does matter in Israel and in other places, as you mentioned. And I belong to a religious community, the Israeli a progressive movement, that is working day and night in order to give more and more Israelis the option to choose between not practicing a religion or Judaism from a religious perspective, and choosing between Orthodox Judaism or Progressive Judaism, in order to make sure that a progressive Jewish voice will be heard in Israel.
I'll come to Mark first, then I'll come back to you in a moment. And Mark, what's your take on this, the way in which religion is impacting on the political process at the moment in Israel?
Well, I think religion cuts both ways. That it can be, when it mixes with politics, it proving to be more problematic than it is beneficial. And in the Israeli political arena, a certain religious perspective on the nature of the meaning of Israel, the nature of what the establishment of the state of Israel means for Jews, has led to a kind of messianic view where people will say that if God gave the land to the Jews, then it's impossible to trade the land for peace. And there's only a minority of people who actually believe that. All the polls are showing that something like 70% of Israelis would be prepared to trade land for peace.
But religion in that sense political weapon,
has been not only as a political weapon. I think it actually goes to the heart of faith. People take seriously what they believe. And if we discount the seriousness of the belief on the level of faith, then we won't actually resolve the conflict. And while I think that the solution to the conflict has to be conducted through secular political means, I think that we ignore the role that religion plays in this conflict to our peril. And to me, it's about finding a new kind of religious language, for example, about the meaning of Jerusalem as a city of peace, that will allow us to come to a solution which I believe can only be resolved through the sharing of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and also of a future Palestine. And so I would like to find a religious language in order to win people over to actually understanding why that fulfills the prophetic mission of Jerusalem being a city of peace.
What you're proposing there to some might seem like untying the Gordian knot. I mean, is a profoundly correct but a profoundly difficult
I think acknowledging that Jerusalem will have to be a shared capital is untying the Gordian knot, because it will be impossible to find an accommodation for two different nationalities who currently share Jerusalem. So rather than ignoring it, I think we need to find a religious language in a city that is deeply religious. And the danger is if we adopt the posture of the new atheists who think that we can just shove religion into a closet and adopt an atheist position on everything, that isn't the reality of the Middle East, that isn't the reality of a world in which religion has come to play an increasingly important role in our identities. And so the challenge is to turn religion into a force for peace rather than into a force for violence and war. And we know which side is winning at the moment, so the challenge is there.
See, it's really interesting. If I could comment as a Jerusalemite, religion also actually provides us with some of the answers and the solution. On the one hand, I had a very interesting discussion with the Palestinian Minister of Islamic Trust, the Minister of Religious Affairs, Dr. Mahmoud Ahbash, who very interestingly comes from the Hamas movement and left Hamas, the fundamentalist movement, and joined the Palestinian National Movement. He's the Minister of Religious Affairs, and he said, we have a very serious problem in Jerusalem now with some of the right-wing extremist members of the Knesset, of the parliament, are trying more and more to go up to the area that's called the Temple Mount, where the temple used to be, and is the place where there are the Muslim mosques today, Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Mosque of Omar, the Dome of the Rock, and this is political dynamite. It's really explosive. And the Minister of Religious Affairs says, according to Islam, according to Sharia, there's no problem for Jews to go up to the Temple Mount, which the Muslims call Haram al-Sharif, the noble sanctuary. From a religious point of view, there's no problem. It's from a political context where there's a problem today. And if there was peace in Jerusalem, it would be okay for those Jews who want to go up there to pray, to go pray. He said, even in Al-Aqsa Mosque, they can go into the mosque and pray if they want. As Jews, as Muslims, it doesn't bother us. From the Jewish point of view, our rabbis, the mainstream ultra-Orthodox rabbis, the rabbinic authorities of the State of Israel, say that Jews should not go up to the Temple Mount for religious reasons, because we don't know the location of the Holy of Holies in our tradition. The Holy of Holies is the physical place where divinity would descend, where God would descend on the end of the Yom Kippur prayers, where the high priest of the temple would go in and ask forgiveness on behalf of the Jewish people. And because we don't know where the Holy of Holies is, we don't want to desecrate the place of the Temple Mount. So mainstream Jewish belief is that Jews should not go there until Messiah comes. From a political point of view, it's very easy to freeze the status quo, which Israel established in 1967, where the Muslims have control of the Haram al-Sharif, of the Temple Mount. The Jews pray down at the Western Wall. And when Messiah comes and wants to change the arrangements in terms of the political sovereignty, we'll leave it in his hands. Until then, the status quo turning into a political agreement is actually acceptable from a religious point of view.
We're getting general nods around the table.
Probably it will take us a few more years before he comes.
Brilliant, but I'm not sure it's going to work on the street right now.
I'd be surprised.
Donna, you're somebody who, and you've listened to the conversation bounce back and forwards, and just something that Mark mentioned, that ultimately we've got to find a way of turning religion from a vehicle of conflict into a vehicle of peace. And this is something about your storyline here that you've been pursuing for years.
Well, I mean, you know, as a Jew in the diaspora, I don't know whether I can comment on Israel. I will say anecdotally. I will say anecdotally that when I've been there, the mixing up of politics and religion has become very complex. I mean, I have friends who don't want to get married under a chuppah because they are off-put by the ultra-Orthodox input into politics, that they want to remove themselves so much that they don't want to get married under the canopy, which is part of the Jewish tradition of getting married. Secularism has become sort of their religion because of the politics and the mixing up of religious and politics.
That you want to go? We've got a call on the board we should take. Okay. Oh, we've got John in Canberra is on the line. If you put your headphones on, and we can hear John because he wants to pick up on some of these questions. John, hi, welcome.
Yeah, how you going, John?
Terrific. You've got a question.
Yeah, well, a couple of things. First up is that a couple of my questions have been answered by your very fine speakers there. But the one thing that I keep coming up, because I come from an Irish Catholic background, and I do mean an Irish Catholic background, and that, I heard a giggle there. That's like saying, I do come from a Jewish background, and I do, we know what we're talking about, but we are in a secular state. But what I wanted to know was, how do you reconcile the matter that as a Catholic person, I've come to understand that in my understanding, the whole of the Romanist papacy kind of thing is all built and designed exactly the same rules as the Mafia, and the Mafia is designed the same rules as the Roman Empire basis, and this thing about theology of a kind of overarching religious knowing and everybody follows what I'm doing thing, and we're all saved by the secular state. But with the matter of Israel itself, God bless them all, the matter of Israel itself has the overarching nature of the rabbis, the whole of understanding of Judaism, but where can they say we enter the modern world with a separation of church and state? That just seems to me that one thing that all the way across so many states of Islam, so many states of Catholic heritage, the Orthodox heritage of Russia and through Central Europe, whatever, when the churches finally get their foot in the door and start telling everybody what to do, it's not too long after that before everybody starts arguing.
All right, we got the general message after the graphic description of the way the churches rule the world. I like the Mafia line, but we get where you're going. It is this problem of the conflation of religion and politics and how you separate out a secular state. It's been the subtext of our discussion. Gillard, just an observation, and perhaps it's a very basic observation about the way things are structured in Israel.
Well, first we need to remember that the vast majority of Jews around the world do not belong to the Orthodox denomination. They're either secular or progressive Jews. And unfortunately, this basic fact is not well reflected in the structure of religion and state issues in Israel for different reasons. When the country was established, as I said before, a monopoly over religious services was handed to the Orthodox establishments of the different religions. But it's important to say that this monopoly exists only in the area of religious services, and it doesn't dominate the other public arenas of life in Israel. Israel is, again, a strong democracy, with a serious challenge in the area of religion and state. It's a complicated issue how you implement a model of separation between synagogue and state in a sovereignty which is a Jewish sovereignty. And many Israelis find it hard to adopt the American concept or the French concept of separation between state and religion, because it can undermine the identity of the state of Israel as the homeland of the Jewish people. Part of our work as a progressive movement is to present Israelis with different concepts of institutional separation between the religious institutions and the branches of government. There is no good reason why religious institutions should be integrated into the different branches of government. This is one of the tasks of our movement and many other partners in Israel. And I believe that in the end, we will prevail, because more and more Israelis, including modern Orthodox Israelis, understand that the current setting of religion and state in Israel undermines not only the democratic character of Israel, but also the Jewish character of our society.
I mean, the great fear that's always presented, Gershon, is that if you go to a popular secular democracy, the Jewish culture will be bred out of existence in a couple of generations. We just sort of lose our identity because we'll be outnumbered.
I don't think that's a fear amongst non-religious or non-Orthodox Israelis, because so much of our culture, which is based on the Hebrew language, is inspired by sacred text, it's inspired by our history and our heritage, our rituals. So when you read modern Hebrew literature that's based in Israel, life in Israel is based on a cycle of time, which is a Jewish cycle of time. It's connected to the Jewish calendar year, and the holidays are all significant, not only of religious events, but of events of nature, of ecology, of the way that we relate to the land of Israel. So Israeli culture will always remain very much rooted in Judaism, even if it's not Orthodox or religious.
How, in this particular moment in time, do you work that through? Mark Baker, come back to you on this one. We've got a situation where religion is becoming more significant in all of those discussions in the Middle East, whether it be Palestinian or Jewish or it's the Sunni versus Shia conflict, as we mentioned earlier. We go to your question that religion is a critical issue here, must be taken very seriously. Yet at the same time, it's the sort of issue, which by the way it's being handled and expressed, is becoming more powerful, but in a way which most people would say is more dangerous.
Right. So firstly, in relation to the situation in Israel, I think we need to distinguish between the separation of synagogue and state from the question of the separation of the Jewishness of Israel and the state. So again, it's a Christian misconception to regard Judaism purely as a religion. I would like to see a situation whereby the separation is more divided between the synagogue and the power of the rabbinate, the Orthodox rabbinate in particular, in the state. And I think that will evolve, and I hope and share the optimism that we've heard here that that will be the future.
Yes, because most people looking at that now would be more pessimistic rather than optimistic. They'd say, no, it's got more conservatively religious rather than less over the last 20 years or so.
But there's a side to Israel that is deeply secular and that fears the power that the rabbinate holds. And at the moment, we're living through a moment where there is a transition. But Israel is a young state. It's less than 70 years old. And I don't think we can predict how it will evolve. All states configure themselves differently over time. And
it's not only if I could interject, not only the secular nature of the state, the growing legitimacy for Jewish pluralism is growing in Israel. The movement for progressive Judaism, the conservative movement in Israel, renewal movements in Israel are growing at a very rapid pace, that the Jewish people in the state of Israel are being offered alternatives that never existed before. Secular institutions that are trying to adopt religious ceremonies for secular people is expanding more and more. We were talking on the way over here of the holiday of Shavuot, which is celebrated by an evening of study of Tikkun, and there's a plethora of activities that are available for non-religious Jews now in all the main cities of Israel that never existed in the past.
We've got only a couple of minutes left, and we've had a couple of calls on the board, but you've covered the area. So we've only got a minute or so left. I want to ask a question to all of you, but Donna, I'll ask you first. How ought the Australian Jew regard Israel in their psyche? That is, what is Israel to be for the Australian Jew?
What a big question. Look, I think Israel is an intrinsic part of all of us. I think we all care a great deal about the Jewish homeland in Israel. And our views of it, of course, differ because we, you know, that's what we're like. And they go from the continuum of acceptance of Israel and support of Israel under any conditions to people who are extremely critical of Israel. And that's the continuum. And there needs to be openness of discussion and openness of a pluralism of attitudes towards Israel within the Jewish community, as well as pluralism with regards to the movements of Judaism religiously.
We've run out of time. It's extraordinary. We've just scratched the surface of a deep and rich and fascinating debate that matters to all of us around the world at the moment, as we see religion being taken more seriously and hopefully appreciated in a way which is going to allow a debate that's more than the fundamentalist hurling of stones between fundamentalist atheists and fundamentalist religious groups. Mm-hmm. It's great to have had you with us. Gershon Bashkin, Gilad Kariv, Mark Baker and Donna Jacobs-Seif. Thanks so much for joining us on Sunday night.
Thank you.
We'll be back after the news on Sunday night on ABC Radio.